Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, May 20th, 2019, and this is episode 166 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today is Eric Nathanson. Is it raining there? Probably not.
No. Should it be? No, it's been nice. It's going to be in the 90s this week, though, like 98. We're not used to that. Like, low 90s is good, but like 98, it's going to be scorching. So I'm getting out of town and going to Jacksonville for the weekend, go to the beach.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, no, it's been odd. It hasn't rained here in the month of May in 8 years, and it's decided to just absolutely pour this week. So it's a little odd.
You guys got everything that we usually get. It's all up by you.
Yeah, it's very odd. I mean, we need the rain, but it's just kind of wreaking havoc with a bunch of outdoor plans, weddings, you know, festivals, all sorts of stuff where in late May you don't expect it. So it's been a little weird, but that's okay. The Giants weren't affected. They were on the road this week, actually. We just recorded last Wednesday, so we knew that this was going to be probably a shorter episode. They only played 4 games, but we were going to talk about it anyway, and they actually had a good week. They went 3-1 this week since we last recorded, and the Giants are now 20-25, 5 games under 500. Still in last place in the NL West, 9.5 games behind the Dodgers, but they are tied with Colorado, so they're creeping up a little bit. San Diego has not been playing well of late either. They're actually under 500 now, and for all the hopes and dreams that Padres fans had this week or this year, they're kind of getting dashed right away. The Dodgers are just doing really well, unfortunately. In fact, CBS now projects the Dodgers to win the West with a probability of 96.5%. And just to add on top of that, they project the total wins for the Giants to be at 64.4. Look, again, we know the Giants aren't winning the West and not making the playoffs this week or this year. Keep saying this week. I'm into that. But at least the Giants have been playing better as of late. They did start the season with their first 11 games going 3-8, but they're 17-17, 500 of their past 34 games. So with a roster that looks pretty bad and some dire predictions for this team, that's not too bad right now. I mean, I don't know if they can sustain that, but if they can just hover within the single digits under 500, maybe they can make a run. You know, that's the one thing I miss about this team and what we're used to with the championship years, besides the actual championships and playoffs, is, you know, throughout the season, you go through these courses where they're winning 5, 6, 7 in a row, and this team just hasn't been able to put that string together. So if that does happen on occasion this year, you know, maybe we can hope for, you know, 75 to 77 wins or something. I think that's the absolute most this team is going to be able to do this year. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, we're a little over a quarter of the way through the season now, and they're five games under, but they're playing better as of late.
Yeah, that's I can see them hovering around this mark the rest of the way. With the way the roster churn is going at the back end, it's keeping at least some talent there, and people who are hot are getting chances to play, so that'll always lead to more wins. And it'd be nice if they put together a streak. But I have a feeling if they end up trading off a bunch of parts, we'll have one of those streaks where, like, Sean Anderson and maybe Derek Rodriguez and Steven Duggar lead the way, you know. The young guys go on a streak in, like, August or September or something like that. I think it's too much to hope for them to climb back into anything, you know, for the year. Last place, at least Colorado's down there with them, you know. At least they're not getting blown out of the water. They're not the worst. They're not the Marlins. They're not, well, pretty much the Marlins. They're not even the Reds. Like, the Reds give up a ton of runs. The Giants, at least, they don't necessarily do that. At least we had some entertaining baseball this past week, and that's really all you can hope for from them.
Yeah, we did. Back on Wednesday, actually, when we recorded, the afternoon game was starting shortly after we stopped recording. But it was a good game against Toronto. Of course, it was their second of just a small 2-game set. The Giants had taken two games previously in Toronto. They dropped that first one, which we talked about. But in the, I guess it's not the rubber match, it was a two-game series. But we have the Major League debut of Sean Anderson, and he didn't do so badly. The Giants did end up winning 4-3. Sean Anderson pitched five innings, gave up only two earned runs. He actually had a couple of knocks, too, and he was like a lifetime 160 hitter in the minors, so I don't expect anything to happen in terms of his bat, but he ripped a double over 100 miles an hour and then singled, so he went 2-for-2 on the day. So, I mean, that was kind of fun, pitchers who rake hashtag.
Yeah, that was a blast seeing some just seeing new life do something like that. And then as he was as he hit one of the triples alley here, and Kite be like, "It's called triples alley for a reason." And then,
I heard that.
It's
only
a double, because you know the kid didn't want to hurt himself, and his family was going crazy. Those are the best kind of moments. I love those major league debut moments. And for him to go out, he earned himself another start. He'll be starting this next week. It was really good to see the kid just kind of breathe some life into the whole ball club and the ballpark in general.
Yeah, he kind of looks like another Thor here in the major leagues. We'll see what happens with that hair and his performance, and I'm sure those nicknames will come out if he ends up being something that sticks around with the Giants. But they had a couple of good offensive performances, only scoring four runs, but their pitching, again, was really good. And, of course, let's go ahead and hear an audio clip of Aramis Garcia's at-bat.
Try to throw people under the bus. Hit well into left center field. On the move, Gritchett. Still on the move, at the wall, out of here! He got it. And it kept on going, and I think the wind helped it a little bit.
So that was Aramis Garcia's first home run of the year. He actually, he played pretty well with the Giants in late season last year, and he's been a power-hitting catcher. His time up here was short-lived. Unfortunately, he did have enough options still left back down to Sacramento, but that's because Buster Posey came off the 7-day concussion list. But that gave the Giants a 3-1 lead. The Blue Jays did later tie it up, but in the bottom of the sixth, Brandon Crawford stepped to the plate.
Drives it to left. Deep. Hernandez back. Out of here! And the Giants take the lead. He's been waiting on that one.
Yeah, you know what he's thinking? Surrounding the bags, he's saying, catch that.
That's his second of the year.
So that was a big home run. I mean, as he dabs and he comes across his home plate, my son would love that. Crawford, that's only his second home run of the year. But both home runs have been big. Both home runs have given him wins. So at least he's choosing moments where they really count. That was in the bottom of the sixth, but the Giants' pen did shut it down after Sean Anderson came out. And he gave up three runs, but again, only two were earned, and the pen shut down the last four innings, and the Giants won 4-3. I don't know. What else did you take away from that game, Eric?
Well, Garcia's fun. He's like, I said it the other day, he's like the anti-Mac. He doesn't hit in AAA, and then he comes up to the bigs, and Garcia had a great September, and, you know, the handful of games he was up, he hit the ball hard again. Like, that homer was a turn-your-head kind of swing. It had that sound off the bat. And then we have to tip our hat to Crawford. We really do. I mean, the guy came through. We didn't know it was going to be the difference at that time in the game. I had a feeling it was, because I kind of dozed through the last few innings. I was feeling sick that day. And it turned out to be the difference, thankfully. And it was just nice to see Crawford contributing like that. The dab, I think Longo is another one who's in on that. He started doing it for his kids specifically. So I think that's a Giants thing this year. They're dabbing with each other a little bit.
Yeah, my daughter, she's 13. Every time she sees the dab now, she goes, "Oh, that's so cringy." Apparently that's a new word amongst the kids, is cringy and cringeworthy. So that's anything that makes them cringe. And so the dab does that to her. But my son, he's 9. He loves it. He's dabbing all the time. So when he saw Hulk dab in Endgame, he was pretty damn happy about that. So
that's funny. That's good stuff.
So anyway, the Giants did beat the Blue Jays 4-3. They split the series but took 3 out of 4 from the Blue Jays for the year. So that was great. They went down to Arizona on Friday, and unfortunately, Friday's game is really nothing to report. They lost 7-0. Shark wasn't horrible, but he did give up 3 runs in 5 1/3. But for the first time in 214 career starts, he did not have a single strikeout. That's crazy. And you'd think, Hey, Shark didn't have a strikeout today. Oh, did he not get through the first or second inning? No, he pitched 5 1/3. He got 16 outs. He just didn't strike anyone out. So that was a little odd, don't you think?
That is weird. And then you also put in here that the Giants were only out hit 10-9. But the Giants had 9 hits and they didn't score a run. What the F is that? Run.
Yeah, and actually, I'm not looking at the box score right now. I don't even know how many runners they had. I don't know if they had any walks or what have you, but clearly they had at least 9 base runners. I imagine they probably had a couple of walks, and maybe they had 10, 11, 12 base runners, and they didn't get a single one across the plate. So certainly a game in which the hits were scattered, the base runners were scattered, and they didn't get that one timely hit. But again, it wasn't a low-scoring game. Arizona made the most out of their 10 hits by scoring 7 runs. So that was one of those ho-hum games. It didn't really turn out into too much. But unfortunately, Derek Holland, who we talked about last week, had those comments was after he was sent to the pen and the fake injury and the whole thing. He comes out in his first appearance out of the pen and just absolutely lays an egg, allowing 4 earned runs in just 1 inning pitch. So, you know, Derek, if you're going to talk smack, and again, I'm not saying we both kind of agreed with what he was saying. He was representing the pitchers, and I don't think it was a bad thing. But there is a kernel of truth to the fact that, well, you wouldn't be sent to the pen if your performance was better. And if you want to fight your way back into the starting rotation, this is not the way to do it.
Now, walk, single, hit by pitch, triple. I mean, that's all self-inflicted damage. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Holland was running into some bad luck. He did run into an error on the fourth run that scored, but still, I mean, he loaded those bases up to let them be cleared by Eduardo Escobar.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. We were actually in the pre-show talking about a roster crunch, and who knows if out of left field, Derek Holland, somebody can get caught in one. Because if he doesn't perform, I mean, the Giants have shown they're not afraid to cut ties at this point. And like you said, he's kind of got a, you know, you got to put up a little bit if you're going to, you know, talk like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Zaidi in that one audio clip we played last show did, you know, he said, look, there's a reason why we gave Derek Holland his contract. We wanted him back. So him and the brass definitely wanted him back. He had an ERA of under 4 last year. He proved very valuable, one of the best starters for the Giants last year. And I think, you know, maybe it's too early to obviously cut ties with him, but after those comments, I don't know. I mean, there's always that possibility here in late May. We'll see what happens, but we'll get to that in a bit. So Saturday, they came out swinging. They beat Arizona 8-5. Bumgarner got the win, but he still gave up 4 runs and 6 1/3, and he got a little wild in the 7th. His pitch count was actually really low through 4 and 5. He was only at like 60, 70 pitches, and I was watching that game thinking, oh, man, he might go 7, you know, or more, like a kind of a classic Bumgarner start, but in the bottom of the 7th, he got a little wild, and he walked the first two guys he faced, then was pulled. Those two guys eventually scored, so he was charged with 4 runs. His ERA is now like a 4.23 or something like that, so he did raise his ERA. This isn't typical Bumgarner, and I know that he's on the trading block right now, but this is not going to increase his value at this point. That being said, I do think that most teams that are interested in acquiring him don't really care about this year's regular season stats. They want the postseason Bumgarner. His velocity was actually up. He looked good for most of the game. So scouts and these teams know this. They're not going to be afraid of a guy like Bumgarner whose ERA is a little over 4 into May or into June. They're still going to, you know, probably pay a decent penny to get him.
I thought he actually looked pretty good. His first, before just basically hitting a wall and seeming to tire, so he left stuff over the zone a little more, or it drifted out of the zone for walks. He gave up the home run to Escobar, and that came after he got called out for interference on the base paths. So you know, yeah. Bumgarner may not have totally been focused at that point. And then the next time he ended up giving up runs was after he gave up a leadoff walk, and that guy eventually came around to score, which are all self-inflicted type wounds. And if Bumgarner doesn't do those things, he usually pitches around them well. So I thought it was a good start for him because he really did. He just kind of ran into a wall towards the 7th inning there with 2 yeah. walks and then the double by John Ryan Murphy. What a weird name. It's just so like, I don't know. And, you know, the offense gave him breathing room early on. And with Bumgarner, that always helps. and the top of the order put some things together and scored runs in the first inning. Like, imagine that. He went out there with a lead in the bottom of the first inning. The Giants starters don't get to do that too often. And it was due to Longo getting a two-out single to, I believe it was, what, driving Duggar? Yeah, because guys had been replaced. But, I mean, Panic led off the game with a single. Duggar followed that with a single. You know, they moved up on a, there you go, moved up on a belt fly ball, and then Longo came through. Like, the Giants needed something like that, and it had to have given Bumgarner that little bit of a extra cushion as he went through the first. I mean, he would have had a 1-2-3 inning if it wasn't for an error on Longo. So I thought it was one of the most complete games the Giants played all season long, from starting pitching to the bullpen to putting the top of the order together, all putting it together, you know, in the third in their scoring rally. It was a walk by Panic, a triple by Duggar, a single by Posey, a single by Belt. Crawford had a sack fly. Like, all the big names did things. It was one of the best Giants wins of the season.
It was fairly complete. Bumgarner got the win. And, you know, Crawford has been doing a little bit better as of late, and obviously we have a lot of highlights of him. But here he is coming up in the top of the sixth with a 2-2 count, and the Giants already leading 4-2 with a runner on first and nobody out.
Not that he would do that. Crawford on the ground, and a fair ball to Joe West. And the Giants are off to the races. Here comes Longoria, and they're going to wave him in. And the throw is going to go to third. And Crawford is safe at third. And coming in to score is Longoria. And the Giants get one of those runs back.
Yeah, that was nice because that was a run-scoring triple. Arizona, after the Giants had a 4-0 lead, scored single runs in the fourth and the fifth to make it 4-2. So it was nice to see the Giants pick up that run, and then Crawford later scored to increase that lead to 6-2. After that, the aforementioned 6-2 lead, we had Pablo Sandoval stepping up to the plate in the top of the eighth. Actually, this is, I take this back. This wasn't 6-2, it was 6-4. Arizona is one of those teams and one of those parks. It's very similar to Colorado, yeah, where it's just a hitter friendly park. Maybe not on that level of Colorado, but no run, you know, no lead is safe in Arizona. And Pablo Sandoval made sure that the game was going to be put out of reach.
High drive to right. Sandoval. Out of here. And the Giants get one of those runs back. It's 7-4.
And so again, the Giants, you know, answered Arizona, scoring two in the bottom of the seventh to make it that 6-4 lead, making it a 7-4 lead. And then right after that, in the top of the ninth, we had Brandon Belt step up with two outs in Arizona.
Belt hits a high drive deep into right center field, into the pool, out of here. And it's 8-4.
So again, another fantastic job by the Giants kind of putting this game away. And as it turns out, Will Smith, you know, his only blemish was a home run in the ninth. But again, a one-run lead in the ninth would have been tied. So the Giants end up winning 8-5. I was reading Twitter that night, and a lot of people were considering, hey, shouldn't these splash hits count if they get wet in Pittsburgh and Arizona pool and everything? Can we put that up on the board at Oracle Park?
It was a direct hit, too, on Belt's home run. It, like, landed perfectly in the pool. Nobody had to dive out of the way or anything.
No, it's cool. And I'm watching the highlight right now. It's replaying over and over on my computer. And there's just – and I watched this live, too. There's no one in the pool. Like, what's going on? Was that just a novelty? Because I remember seeing, you know, bikini-clad women and fat dudes with beers always hanging out in the pool. And it just seems like lately there's been no one in there.
Well, it's the ninth inning, so maybe they'd had enough beer that's a good eaten point. Enough barbecue by then. So, but it was clear when Brandon Crawford sent one crashing into them. Brandon Belt.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's fantastic. So
that Belt triple you play, I mean, that Crawford triple you played, along with the Crawford home run, were his only two hits this week. Like, I wanted to tip my cap to him for getting hits in big spots, but they were still his
overall,
only two hits this week.
Yeah, I know. It'll be interesting as the All-Star game votes start coming in, because last year he was voted in as a starter, and he was hot at the beginning of last year. He was hitting over 300 well into May, and then he just tanked. And I think by the time he started the All-Star game, he was down at 240 or 250 or something like that, which was still okay, certainly not All-Star worthy. I don't think that's going to happen this year.
No, probably not. I mean, he's...
it'd be embarrassing if he was. I mean, as a Giants fan, I mean, come on. You'd be like, I don't care if he fielded every single play or a ball that he was hit to him this year. It's when you're hitting 205 or whatever he is right now, you don't deserve a start.
No, but his defense still is coming through in certain situations like it did for yesterday's game.
It was fantastic, and we'll get to that in a second. So Saturday, they won 8-5, and then yesterday, fantastic game. It was more of a classic Giants game. Drew Pomerantz did make his first start off of the injured list. It wasn't great, but he did keep him in the game, allowing 2 earned runs and 4 2/3, but he walked 5. Again, his pitch count went through the roof. He just was not accurate. He's not hitting his spots. Catchers diving all over the place. And so I consider it very fortunate that he only gave up 2 runs in his time on the mound. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought so as well. He just never attacks at all. I mean, he only struck out 2. So what did he get for it? He only struck out 2. He walked 5. It's frustrating to watch. And I don't think that's the kind of pitcher the Giants have in mind. I don't think they want guys who are nibblers. I think they do want guys who attack the zone.
I do wonder, because that Kurt Young and others, they got to be talking to him about this stuff. I mean, this is not like fans know this and they don't. They know that he nibbles. They know his ball to strike ratio. They know how he's missing spots. I don't know if mentally they're trying to get him in the zone and he says yes and he's just not performing. I don't know, because as a manager and as a pitching coach, I'd rather see him go out there and hit corners or try to hit corners and get hit hard, even if he makes a couple of mistakes, rather than what he typically does, which is walk a lot of guys. Because that's just the free base runners just puts a drag on the defense. I mean, playing baseball, and I do too. You're a fielder out there and you just see this, 8-pitch at bats and 4-pitch walks and 2 or 3 guys getting on base every inning. It puts a lot of stress on the defense and it keeps them off their toes as well, because you just say, hey, let him hit it, man. If it falls, it falls, but let him hit it. We're backing you up here.
Yeah, he never like rolls the double plays in the middle of those either. 16 of the 19 balls in play against him yesterday were in the air.
Wow.
So he only had 3 ground ball contact. So it's not like he's rolling up double plays to keep them into it, even though he's jamming the bases full of people. It's been a struggle with Pomerantz. He almost doesn't fit in. And then the bullpen came in and just like Trevor Gott was just efficient and just firing the ball in the zone. And, between Gott, Melanson, Watson, Dyson, and Smith, pretty much all their best relievers, save for Maranta, the bullpen got it done the rest of the way so that they had a chance to win the game in the end.
Yeah, so the bullpen was absolutely fantastic. However, the Arizona, when the game was still tied at 2 in the bottom of the 9th with 2 outs and a 1-1 count with Adam Jones up. By the way, we should talk about his performance with Arizona, because the Giants, we weren't pining for him, but we were saying, who else do they have? Make an offer. Let's see what happens.
And
obviously
worked.
That didn't happen. It probably wouldn't have worked, but he's hitting in Arizona, not Oracle Park. But he comes up with 2 outs and the winning run on 3rd. And Brandon Crawford saved the day.
Crawford, can he throw him out? He got him! Just an unbelievable play to keep this game moving on. And Adam Jones can't believe it. I can't either.
I can't either. I know you can't see the highlight. You guys have probably seen the highlight already, but as you could tell by Kipe's reaction there, I mean, that was a fantastic play. And it's one thing to see it in regular motion, regular speed, but to see it in slow motion, to see him dive fully extended into the 5.5 hole on the grass to pop up and fire a strike. One hopper, granted, but Brandon Belt, of course, received on the other end another Gold Glove play, picks it out of the dirt to record the out. I mean, that saved the game. That's it. Arizona would have won.
That play was so fun, because Crawford has the ability, because he has such a strong arm, that he can pretty much rush his throw and still fire it over there fast. And that saved him in that moment. That was like old school Giants. And then to have them come up right away and Pavel reward Crawford for the play. It was like kismet. It was like the Giants were going on a victory tour again, you know?
It was great because right away, like you said, top of the 10th, first extra inning with a 1-2 count and nobody out. First batter up after Crawford makes that wonderful play. Pablo Sandoval comes to the plate.
Sandoval drives one to left. It is out of here. Unbelievable. He's done it again, and the Giants take the lead. And that was no cheapie, folks. He's going to get a great welcome.
And he did it again in a two-strike count. Three pinch hits that have ended up in a home run in his career. And this one, he goes opposite field in a ballpark that really has not been easy to hit the ball out of.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I mean, to see the reaction. Panda, you know, look, he's having fun this year. He knows that he's just a part-time bench player. But I'm telling you, Eric, and I know you have some stats here, but he has just been outperforming everyone's expectations. And Bochy's been just giddy. I think because he knows that Farhan probably doesn't really target Panda as one of his, you know, prototypical players. But at the same time, they have him for cheap. So I think Zaidi's fine with him. But he has been absolutely outperforming his OPS, his average, his slugging percentage. Shouldn't say his average. Slugging percentage. Everything is way up. And I know that he has a crazy double count this year, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's something. Well, I wrote it down. He's got 5 as a pinch hitter. And he's got 10 overall. Look at that. He's got 10 doubles overall. He's hitting .301. 25 hits so far this season, and 17 of them are for doubles or homers for extra bases.
Wow.
Pablo's like, he's the most entertaining Giant. He's worth the price of admission right now. You mentioned he's not a Farhan type. He walked twice in a game the other day. And it was the first time he had walked since June of last year, I believe it was.
Yeah, we talked about that last Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing everything. And I wrote it in the Who's Hot, but Pablo is just, he's the perfect pinch hitter, apparently. He's 9-for-24 as a pinch hitter with 5 doubles and 2 homers. And the other 2 are singles. So that means he's got more doubles than homers and singles combined as a pinch hitter. He's just born to be that role. And it's good that Bochy has something so positive during this last season that doesn't seem to be working out the way he wants. So it's nice to have one of his favorite sons. And it's good to see Pablo having fun. Like, you could hear the dugout reaction when he got back, because he's lost Parra and Solarte from the roster, his two buddies from childhood. Mm-hmm. So it's just Pablo and the Giants again, and it's good to see he and Duggar seem to have a really good relationship. So it's still just good to, you know, Pablo in the middle of things. It just makes Giants fans happy, and he's just entertaining as hell. He really is. I love Pablo.
Well, what I like to see, and you heard it in that clip with a bunch of yelling and screaming in the dugout, you know who was the first to greet him with a big bear hug? It was Longoria.
Ooh.
He comes right there about midway up the steps and just gives him a big bear hug, and that's the yeah you heard. So it's fun because, you know, even Longo, who's like, you know, he's got to realize Panda's behind him in the depth chart, and Panda's been kind of outperforming Longo this year. So,
yes.
Yeah, well, we won't talk about defense as far as metrics right now, but, I know Longo doesn't feel like his job is threatened per se, because he has his, you know, this long contract and Panda's only on for this year. But still, that being said, I wouldn't rule out any possibility of Longo, who has not been very good this year offensively, if he goes into more of a slump, that Panda gets a few more starts here and there. And, you know, but it doesn't matter. As a team, they want to win. And so you see your teammate, even if it's the guy that could challenge you for your job, potentially, hit a game-winning home run in the 10th inning, how can you not be happy? I mean, you want wins. Plain and simple.
Yeah, it's fun to win, regardless of anything else that's going on. And we saw it this week. Pablo made 2 starts this week out of 5 games. So yeah. There seemed to be a little mixing and matching going on. I guess Bochy is willing to give Longo a bit of a rest. Maybe he's just getting old and he wants some time off anyways, but we're starting to see it more now. I don't know if it's because they're showcasing Pablo, or if they're trying to hide something with Longo, or they don't, you know, Longo's not doing it in his showcase, but they seem to be willing to get Pablo. But that's crazy that it was pinch hit homers in back-to-back games for him. Yeah. You know, he was a regular. It's a much different role, and not everybody could do it. They said it on the broadcast. It was on Saturday's game, that Pablo's the kind of guy that, like, 30 years from now, you could be at a barbecue with him, and he could be like, oh, yeah, I could still hit a baseball, and he could do it in wingtips. He totally could. You could see him at, like, some function after somebody's quinceañera or something like that, some big party where everybody's dressed up. There's a ball field there. He's like, oh, yeah, I could still hit it a mile, and then he can go do that, you know, wearing dress shoes and
I don't want to know how big he's going to be then, but
but he'll always naturally be a hitter. It's just, it's impressive to see him take on that role, even if he's not going to take the walks. He makes contact even with two strikes. He's determined to. You can't throw the ball past him.
Oh man, he's going to be one hell of a beer league softball player. Yeah. When he retires.
He'll be launching it all over the place.
Who's this schmuck? He weighs 300 pounds. There it goes. Yeah.
How did he hit that down the left field line? He's batting lefty. I don't understand.
That's what I was about to say is, I know Arizona's a hitter-friendly park, but he hit that thing almost 15 rows up in the left field stands. I mean, he crushed it. It was a no-doubter. I mean, Oppo, that's insane. I mean, he hit it where right-handers hit it, you know, with a good shot. So it was great to see. And, I mean, I know his right-handed, you know, splits are not as good. And Longo's right-handed. So I don't know. I mean, even though the league is more dominated by right-handers, certainly in the NL West, you have a preponderance of left-handers. So you're still going to see Longo in most of the time. But if Panda keeps hot like this, especially against right-hand starters, I mean, that's when I think Bochy's going to pull the trigger for sure. I mean, if this continues. But I'm just really happy. I love Panda. He's a great guy, despite the stuff he said about the Giants when he left for Boston. I mean, and let's be honest, he's still getting paid whatever, 20 mil from Boston this year. So he's doing fine. No one needs to feel sorry for him. He's doing great.
It's like stealing. It's delicious how the Giants have him on the cheap and the Red Sox are paying his tab.
I should post this on the Twitter account. I forgot to do this, but someone had posted his slugging and OPS over the years in a bar graph column chart. And it's so funny because it's kind of level with a couple of little spikes, nice and, you know, good. You know, obviously he was good in 09, 10, 11, 12. And then it dips in the 2+ years he was with Boston to his career lows. And then it spiked back up the last 2 years. I mean, it really does say something about the environment he's been hitting in. He is so comfortable in San Francisco for whatever reason. He just went to Boston and it just didn't work out and he did not perform. He comes back to San Francisco and he's doing, and again, we talked about it earlier, career highs in OPS and slugging right now. Granted, have a whole season to go here and he's not a starter, but these are good things to see.
Yeah, it's not often that players get this opportunity either. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird that some guys just do feel comfortable somewhere. He tried it too. He tried the new thing. He thought he wanted the new thing, but he really wanted the old thing.
He wanted the old thing. He wanted the comfort. Yeah, exactly. All right, so in other news, Johnny Cueto. Hey, he's back in the news. He obviously had Tommy John surgery at the end of the last year. He has been rehabbing. I love following his Instagram page. He is just such a character. He's so much fun. But what's really great is he's a little bit ahead of schedule. So I got about a 30-second clip here from the game yesterday, and it's Kipe talking about Cueto and how he's doing.
Yeah, the good news today was Johnny Cueto, well, look at the great shape he's in. And then he went down the bullpen, and what'd they say? He got up to 86 miles per hour?
Well, I mean, he's doing real well. He's kind of ahead of where he's supposed to be coming back from Tommy John surgery. And if everything goes right, I mean, he will have an opportunity to pitch late this summer, sometime in August, maybe September.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's just been, I guess, ahead of schedule. He's doing well. And, you know, the video they showed there, him in Arizona, you know, giving high fives and knucks to his players, his teammates, all smiles. He was running. He looked fast. He's looked like he's trimmed a couple of pounds. He looked good off the mound. He's thrown 86. I mean, he's thrown 86 already. I mean, that's not major league quality stuff. He throws in the low 90s, but it looks like he's not that far off. And like Crook said, you know, maybe he's going to be pitching in August instead of September. That's great news. It doesn't mean anything for this year, but it'd be great to see him have at least, you know, maybe four or five starts before going into 2020.
He seems to be a hard worker. When you mentioned the Instagram, that's kind of what I pick up on from him. Like, he's really determined to get back, prove himself, work hard. And it's awesome to see, like, the reactions from Bochy said it, like, he's surprised to say that he thinks he could be pitching at the end of the year, that he's ahead of schedule on what everybody thought he would be, and hopefully it's not a detriment. It'd be fun to have Cueto back. It's like, it'd be like Cueto and the young kids probably by the time he comes back. So that winning streak I'm talking about, Cueto needs to be in the middle of it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Hopefully they, you know, if the Giants are in any position to get to, I think, what was it we were talking about, 75 or 76? Is it 75 wins to get Bochy to 2,000?
Yes.
75. So, I mean, if they're in any position, let's say it's August and they're, you know, 55 wins or something like that, and they're like, look, we need 20, 25 more wins the last 2 months of the season. I mean, what if Cueto could come up and give them an extra, you know, couple of wins and get Bochy to that 2,000? That'd be at least something to shoot for. I know that sounds lame. You're not going to put a banner on the wall because of that, but at the same time, it's something to fight for. I mean, guys like Cueto, even though he wasn't a part of all of the World Championship seasons, but certainly some of the players that have still been a part of those championship seasons with Craw and Buster and others, I mean, they love Bochy. And so I could see at the end of the year them just really fighting hard to get him to sign off with the 2K. It's not going to affect his Hall of Fame eligibility or chances, but you know, it's at least it's something to shoot for, and as well as maybe not finishing in last place, maybe finishing in single digits below 500, something to shoot for to transition into next year to build upon.
I mean, if they keep playing 500 ball, that's where they'll end up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're only five games under right now. What does that equate to at the end of the year? That's 70. I mean,
that's 76 wins, right?
Or yeah.
So? No, 77 wins, I guess.
No, yeah, it'd be 78.
Well, you have 81 is yeah. So if you back off by three, that'd be 78. Yeah, yeah, 78 wins. Be around there. Well, that's not too bad. All right, so let's talk about some transactions. After four games and only one at-bat in which he struck out, Aaron Altherr is DFA'd. So his tenure as a Giant is questionable. Now, I have not checked. Has he cleared waivers? Do you know, or is it still in that process?
I think it's still in that process, but yeah. Forever Giant Aaron Altherr. Oh
yeah,
my
Forever
gosh.
Giant, question mark? So a lot of people are like, look, Zaidi did this strategically. They knew that he knew that he wasn't going to be a permanent fixture on this roster. He was taking the chance on a flyer to go ahead and stash him on the roster, give him a little bit of time. Now, granted, I think everybody thought he would have a little bit more time than what he had, but he was DFA'd in order to make place or to make room for Pomerantz coming off the IL. But if he does clear waivers, he'll just be stashed in Sacramento if he accepts the assignment, and then he could be around for later. And if he's not, well, I don't think there's any real harm going on there. So that's the kind of guy that Zaidi is. I mean, it's definitely interesting, Eric, you know, to be a part of the Sabian Bobby Evans era where they really held on to players much, much longer than sometimes we would want, but certainly longer than Zaidi does. Zaidi is definitely operating this from a strictly, I shouldn't say strictly, 90% kind of numerical video game standpoint. And he is just rolling through these players right now. And so, like you, I think you tweeted earlier today about the trade with Kratz, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It's not that Zaidi is sitting on his butt doing nothing. He's really trying. And so he's converting signings and trades and flyers into potential useful pawns and bishops and knights for this team later down the road. And, you know, we're 6 months less into this experiment. It's going to take a couple of years. So I think Giants fans need to pump the brakes, and I know a lot of them are calling for Zaidi's head, but no other GM could do anything more than what he's done so far.
Yeah, he's shown himself to be willing to take risks, and there's like acceptable risks. Altherr is an acceptable risk. You know, we'll give him a shot, but if we lose him, we lose him. Let him, you know, catch on somewhere else. That's not something we covet. If we can stash him, let's stash him. That seems to be the way he is. He's willing to lose players. He's traded away a bunch of players already in his tenure, and it's not what we're used to as Giants fans at all. But it's just, it's part of, I hate using the term the process because it totally got bastardized by the 76ers and them trying to rebuild. Yeah. But we have to trust the process. I believe that in any business and for a team to get back up and running, they need to trust the process they're under. And, you know, did Altair get a fair shake? No. Did he get more of a shake than he might have gotten with another team? Yes. So, you know, you can't really argue against moves like that. And the fact that they've got to constantly, they've reshuffled the catchers. Aramis Garcia was there while Buster was on the concussion. And then they had to put Kratz on waivers, and they eventually traded him to Tampa Bay for a young relief pitcher who was a player to be named later, Matt Selinger, a right-handed pitcher who will be reported into Augusta. So, like, every single day there's another transaction that's going on. Like, the Kratz one spills over from, like, a day or two ago when they actually traded him. But Buster came back, and then Pomeranz came back. So they're constantly having to move things around. So Zaidi just tries to find movable parts. And if he has to lose them, so be it. There'll be other movable parts for him in the future.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's kind of like a game of poker where – you take your spots, you choose your spots into, you know, I'm going to go ahead and fold this, but I'm going to go ahead and double down on this and try to build up your stack to then move all in on certain things. You're trying to take small wins and convert them into larger wins. Small parts, convert them into larger parts. And that's exactly what Zaidi's trying to do. And I think Kratz is a good example of this. You know, Kratz is 38 years old. I don't think any Giants fan thought he was going to do anything more than hit a, you know, 200 with a couple of bombs for the Giants this year. He's certainly not in their future, and they turned that into what could be nothing, but, you know, by all accounts, this guy has some good stuff. He has an above average knuckle curve. He throws in the low 90s. He's young, and he's a reliever, so it's worth looking at. Right now he's going to be placed in double A. And, you know, in a couple of years, what if he does well and ends up being, you know, kind of a Tony Watson guy or a middle relief guy or Nick Vincent or Trevor Gott or whatever it may be, something that is more serviceable and more important than an Eric Kratz. So these little small moves don't seem like much right now. But if he strikes gold with even a couple of these guys, that could turn into a huge, huge momentum shift 1, 2, 3 years from now for the Giants. So I applaud what he's doing. It's hard to see the revolving door because we're not used to this as Giants fans. It's hard to, like, who's that? Who? What's his number? I mean, I see more posts on social media now about people going, I wish the Giants would put names on the back of their jerseys because I don't know who these guys are. And I know it's some people are serious and some people are not, but it is true to some extent. Sometimes you're like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't recognize his face. I don't know the number. I don't know his body style, his mechanics. Like, as a kid, don't you remember growing up, because this is before free agency was like it is now, where, I mean, you could name everyone on the field either by their number, their face, or their batting stance or pitching style. And it's getting harder and harder to do that, especially with the Giants.
Yeah, Donovan Solano. It took me a minute to figure out who he was because I must have slept through the transaction. So the first time I saw him playing, I was like, oh, okay. So that's what that guy looks like. Because, I mean, I remember reading about him in spring training, but I didn't see him do anything.
Yeah.
But back in the day, the batting stance was a big one. I can think of everybody. And it's not just batting stance. It's how they stand in the field. And if you look out and you don't know the guy's body type, it's hard to figure out. That's why the Giants are doing that tiptoeing, keeping some familiar faces around that we all recognize and moving everything else around it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting times, especially as we transition into next year when Bochy is no longer going to be the manager. We're going to see these moves accelerate, I think, over the next 2 years. And, of course, it's going to potentially crescendo this year with the trade of Bumgarner. And even though at the beginning of the season I don't want it, I still don't want it. I just feel like it's more and more likely considering his moves this year. I really do. I mean, granted, the deal has to be there. Zaidi is not going to give up Bumgarner for shit. You know, he's not going to give it up for people who are teams that are just offering him nothing. But if it's somewhat desirable, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I like you. I don't want it to happen. I'd love to see Bumgarner stay because I think he is still a good pitcher who can be utilized for years to come.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a sad day if and when that happens in June or July. You know, and someone was counting down like the number of starts till July 31st, and someone was placing it at like 5 to 6 starts left for Bumgarner potentially, and it could even be less if they pull the trigger earlier than that. But that's going to be a sad day, man. I mean, I don't even want to think about it. But the reality is, it's probably a much greater than 50% chance it's going to happen. I'd put it around 75 to 80. What do you think?
I mean, it seems likely because the Giants have shown that they're not going to compete. And so Zaidi gets every reason in the book to start trading off parts, which is fine. If it's maybe something they should have explored last year before everybody got fired. just saying, maybe if they had changed course, they'd still have jobs. But it seems likely, I don't know, there's still this part of me that holds out hope that somehow, some way, they're not going to trade Bumgarner and they'll just let him walk in free agency. But, I mean, that doesn't – it doesn't help the ball club in the long run.
It doesn't help the ball club. That's the big thing. A lot of people are like, right. Why would you do this to Bum? Well, the reality is he's a free agent at the end of the year, right? Now, yeah. The good news is that his no-trade team list of 8 teams were all playoff teams, right? And people were upset saying, why aren't the Dodgers on there? Well, that's because even though they're a playoff team, Bumgarner's agent know that he's never going to be traded to Dodgers. That's like already a non sequitur, right?
He's not going to LA. It's not happening.
So, and probably similarly with Arizona and San Diego, it's certainly intra-division. It doesn't make sense. Because then you get the guy facing you. So why would they do that? So you pretty much eliminate the whole division. They added, you know, the Yankees and the Astros and the Cubs and, you know, all these teams as no trade, you know, teams. So the strategy here certainly shows that Bum and his agent want to stay in San Francisco. That's a message. That is like, look, I want to stay here. This is why I'm blocking all these teams. Not because I don't want to live in these places. It's because I don't want these good teams to be able to offer a good package to you. Let a 500 or barely above 500 team offer you a package and see what you want to do. And if you trade me, I can't control it. But are you really going to do that? And I think maybe, even though he's got a great deal, now he doesn't have a great deal. The Giants have a great deal with Bum's contract right now, and he should be paid a lot more. It is a little bit of a sign saying that maybe he would be willing to take a slight hometown discount to re-sign with the Giants, but the Giants can't count on that, and Zaidi can't count on that. So I still think he's going to look for any deal that brings an influx of talent to the minor leagues because the Giants have one of the worst pools of talent, you know, across the board. So if you want to build this team back up in 3 years, Bumgarner maybe not in that mix in 3 years, right? He certainly is going to be a postseason pitcher this year and potentially next year. Beyond that, we really don't know. Is he going to be a 33, 34, 35-year-old pitching for the Giants in the postseason? He's not going to be like he was in his mid-20s, let's be honest. So I think that's kind of the tack that Zaidi has to take. And no matter how much I want him to be back with the Giants would have to offer him a near max contract for probably 4, 5, 6 years. And that's one of those deals, again, the Giants have been burned by for so many years with Kane and Lincecum and Zito and others. And so they're just, it's not a smart move to do that. Even if you get him for a couple more good years, it may not be enough to get the Giants back to that postseason. And by then, Bum may just, he just may not be good. I mean, look what he's doing this year. He's not quite vintage Bum. I'm not saying he's washed up, not at all. He's only, what, 28, 29? But at the same time, he's operating by the Bill Walsh you know, kind of operative. I mean, look what he did with Joe Montana and Ronnie Lott and others. And they proved to be the right choice. And so yeah. I think that's what he's going to do.
I mean, it's possible that even if they trade him, he comes back around cheap. But like you said, I'm not sure that even will happen. But I don't want him to leave. I don't want Bum to leave. I don't want Posey to leave. I don't want – that's it. That's the list. Seriously, that's the list.
Well, that like, you know, after Kane, you know, left after he bombed, I mean, that's because he was the obviously the longest tenured Giant from 2000, you know, set or five he was drafted. It's just, it's rough because Bumgarner's contract ends this year, Posey's contract ends after 2020, and you know, we could be talking here on this podcast in 2021 with virtually no one connected from the 2014 season. But at the same time, if we're getting to 2021 and 22, this is 7-8 years after their last championship. You can't expect too many players to be around at that point. I mean, just you know, it's physics, man. It's aging.
It is. It's high turnover. Like the Red, I've used the Red Sox as the example. The team that won it all last year is not the same that won it all in 2013.
Yep.
Xander Bogaerts, I think, was the only connection between the two teams. So Buster Posey is going to be that guy when the Giants win it all in 2022.
There you go. All right. So let's talk about the last transaction. Andrew Suarez is going to be starting tonight. So the Giants, as far as I know, since we started recording, has not made that corresponding move to make room on the roster. So what do you think, man? We were talking about this pre-show. We really don't know.
Yeah, that's why I kind of mentioned Holland earlier as a sneaky guy they could cut ties with. But I also don't know if on the option front, if they could like send Sean Anderson down for tonight, let Suarez pitch, and then send Suarez right back down because Anderson's supposed to start tomorrow night. So I don't know what they do with the roster crunch there because they're not getting rid of Solano as a backup in the infield. Pablo ain't going anywhere. No. And they don't really have any backup outfielders at the moment. So everybody who's out there, Pilar, Williamson, and Duggar, need to be out there. I mean, aside from like – and I only mention Holland because honestly, he's doing the worst in the bullpen right now. Even Nick Vincent, who was the opener the other day, that was his worst outing of the season. He hasn't had bad outings. And so I don't know what the hell they're going to do. I really don't. I mean, my best guess is the swap for Anderson and the swap back for Anderson. But other than that, I mean, maybe something weird happens. I saw one of the beat writers tweet about it. There could be some news tomorrow because they also didn't know what was going to happen on the roster crunch. So maybe this will be one of our first times going, whoa, with one of the moves that gets made.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, they're going to be playing tonight. So let's talk about who's hot and who's not. So we already talked about Pablo. You know, as you said, as a pinch hitter, he's 9-for-24 with 5 doubles and 2 home runs. Joe Panik, been playing much better as of late. He looks more confident at the plate, too. Just I've just been watching him, and he looks like he's attacking the ball. He's 6-for-18. That's a .333 clip with 3 doubles, 5 runs, and 4 walks in the past 5 games. And then Brandon Belt, again, always the pinata for Giants fans, a certain section of Giants fans. 5-for-14 the last 5 games with a home run and a double. So it's good to see some of these older Giant veterans go ahead and doing well. So how about who's not, Eric?
Who's not? Well, it's funny. That's why we had to talk about the veterans because it's the new guys that are not hot right now. Steven Vogt is 0-for-9 over the last week, which is the 5 games, the 2 against Toronto and 3 Arizona. He started 2 games, but he still went 0-for-9. Tyler Austin went 0-for-5 this past week, which was 1 start and 2 other pinch hitting appearances. And I think we dare say it, Mac is only hitting 167. And really, I mean, he had a decent day Saturday with a couple hits, but one of them was kind of fluky. But other than that, Mac really hasn't been putting barrel on ball. So I'd say, yeah, Mac's definitely involved in the who's not. It's a black hole in left field. I was looking it up before the show started. Giants left fielders have the worst batting average in baseball with a .163 batting average. They've hit a total of 6 doubles and 2 homers. That's it. In 183 plate appearances, they've got 8 extra base hits, and they've struck out 58 times. It's ugly, and it's part of why we're going to keep seeing the roster churn. I think Max's audition ends after this week if he doesn't put it together.
You think this week, huh? That early?
Yeah, I do. I think they feel like they've given him – that'll be about 2.5-3 weeks at that point. I think that that's enough of a rope. And I think the Giants would be willing to try something else. I thought that was why Altair was brought in, but obviously that wasn't.
No, not at all. No, that's sad. I mean, look, I'm a Mac fan. I think you are too. We want him to succeed. It's just not working out right now, so we'll see what happens.
Again, I mean, maybe he hits 4 homers this week and solidifies the job. Good for him if he does that.
The problem is that we talked on Wednesday about how, you know, he was hitting whatever, 175 at the time or 187 or something like that, and like or maybe a little over 200, and we're thinking about how like 2 hits makes a difference in like 50 or 60 points in batting average right now because he has so few at bats, and that's the only hit against the kind of the stats going. But you look at how he's been doing the last, you know, 4 years of him being called up. He has 300 and something at bats, and he's hitting 220 as a major leaguer. He just seems like he's always going to be that quad A player. So it's not like he was great in the past and now he's doing poorly and you're like, oh, let's just wait for him. He just seems to always do well in AAA and not do well in the major leagues. So he seems to straddle that in that quad A player territory. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I personally would give him at least another 4 weeks just to get him at least over 100, 120 at-bats, because I think he's at 60 at-bats right now, 65 at-bats, just to see what happens. But it's not looking good so far for Max. So, all right, this week in Giants history, we got a good one, don't we, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, though, because it was a very big highlight in 2013, Angel Pagan hitting a walk-off inside the park home run, but it was also like the last highlight of 2013 because he got injured and the team kind of tanked after that. But back in 2013, this week, I believe it was on the 25th, Angel Pagan hit a 2-run walk-off inside the park home run to beat the Colorado Rockies. And it was one of those moments where Flan was running down the line and skipping afterwards. It was a great moment for the Giants, who seemed to be on their way before they weren't. But it was a really fun game, and I'm going to highlight it this week. And I think you have audio of it.
I do. So here we go. May 25th, 2013, Angel Pagan comes up with 1 out and a runner on second. Now, this is in the 10th inning, the bottom of the 10th inning, and Colorado scored in the top of the 10th to go up 5-4. So this is why it wasn't a walk-off double or single. This is why he needed to score. So here's the highlight.
Pagan hits one high and deep to right. Kadir back. It is off the bottom of the wall, and it kicks away from everybody. Pagan is being waved in. Here's the throw to the plate. It is not in time, and that is the ball game. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I could let it go there, but I won't. It's just fun because I'm watching this and there's Matt Cain and Andres Torres and Pablo Sandoval and just, I don't know. I know that Dave Rigetti is hugging him right now. I'm still watching it. Oh my gosh. There's Marco Scudero. There's Sergio Romo.
Yep, oh my God.
I mean, it's just incredible to see this, you know? Oh, there's their bullpen catcher who's still there. it's hard to watch because even though the Giants didn't even make the playoffs in 2013, by the way, so this isn't like, oh, this is back in the championship years. No, they didn't win this year, but you know, this happened all the time for, you know, a good 5, 6, 7 years in Giants history, and we're just not seeing it as much now. So it's great to relive these moments, and I know that you yourself have done, I mean, look, Eric, has been so good at bringing in This Week in Giants History, and he had a great article this week, and it was to talk about Willie Mays, and I read it. I loved it. I think, you know, first of all, we got a lot of good reactions from it, but if you guys haven't seen it, check out TorchCast.com for Eric's This Week in History about Willie Mays. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I just want to point out, like, I see tweets go by my timeline, like Cody Bellinger in his last 100 at-bats has like 6 home runs and 4 doubles and all this stuff. And what I wrote about in last week's This Week in Giants History and the weekend that Willie had, it like just trumps that kind of stuff. Over just one span of the weekend, and this is why I'll encourage people to go read the rest of the article. Over one weekend against the Dodgers, 2 at home and 2 in LA, Willie went 12 for 17 with 7 homers, 15 runs driven in, and scored 10 runs himself. He had 10 extra base hits, and he walked 5 times, only struck out once in the 4 games. So 12 for 17, a 706 batting average, 7 home runs. And 3 of the 4 games were multi-homer games. So he homered twice, once, twice, and twice over the stretch of the 4 games. It's totally worth the read, just about Willie. And, like, we remember him as good, but he was just even better than some people we could even remember. So,
well, what I love about these articles that you've been digging up is, you know, we all remember Willie Mays as the greatest ever. And when you put this in an article, and even I'm reading this going, I did not know this. I did not know he hit that many home runs in 17 at-bats. That's just stupid.
I didn't know it either. I stumbled across it. Some of these, you know, I got to work a little harder. And I found out, I wrote it in there, the Giants set a record that day for total bases. The 4th game of the series, they had 50 total bases in that game. And it is still a Giants record. And that led me to finding Willie's weekend. So I didn't even know it. It's stories like that. They go by totally unnoticed that nobody will ever know about. You know, like Hunter Pence once had a weekend in L.A., you know, that was very similar that you could write home about. And, like, sometimes those will go unnoticed and just lost in the annals of time because the 1958 Giants finished in third place. But for one weekend, Willie was better than any player ever was in the history of baseball.
No, he was just he's still kicking. We love him. I cannot believe that he did that whole home and home series. I mean, just incredible. So I really do urge you to check out that article on TorchCast.com.
I mean, Twitter would break if, like, Trout did something like that right now. You know, every at-bat would be must-watch, and oh my gosh. You know, I couldn't imagine the reaction if a player had that good of a weekend in today's game.
Well, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., by the way, was named AL Player of the Week, hitting 4 home runs this week. You know, I wish I drafted him late in my fantasy draft, which everyone was kind of like skirting around him going like, when is he going to be called up? You know, and I really wish I drafted him, but I waited one round too long. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's just not a one in a generation talent. He's a one in a lifetime plus lifetime talent. I mean, he is just, like we said, I mean, there's Babe Ruth and Willie Mays and everyone else. I mean, there's just no one else. Babe Ruth did not have the physical capabilities of Willie Mays out on the field. And I think that's what separates those two, even though, you know, Mays hit more home runs. Aaron hit more home runs. Mays, you know, caught and saved way more runs than Ruth ever did. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things. We just love having Willie. He's a national treasure. I just hope that I can talk to him one of these days, you know, before he dies. I hate to say that, but it's true. So we'll see what happens.
It's going to be a rough day when he goes.
I know. It's going to be rough. All right. So coming up, the Giants have 4 at home versus Atlanta starting tonight, and then 3 against Arizona at Oracle. So a 7-game homestand. So I think we're going to be back on Memorial Day, unless my family tells me I'm not. So we'll talk about that later. But I don't know. You have anything else to pimp there, Eric?
No, just I will be writing about that Angel Pagan this week in Giants history. Probably Wednesday, since I'm heading out for the weekend after that.
Yeah. Did you see that live, by the way?
I remember where I was when it happened. I was watching it. I remember the Brandon Crawford walk that preceded it as well. And I believe there was then a bunt to move Crawford from first to second. And then Pagan came up and did his thing. I'm not going to say where I was because it was in certain parts of the house holding a phone watching the game and not watching on the television. But that's how I remember it. I totally remember. I started watching games on a daily basis about midway through 2012. So yeah. They were part of my every day by then.
Yeah, I was watching that game at home. Just happened to be, we were home. I think it was the weekend. So
yeah, it was
happened
Saturday,
to be watching. It was it was so much fun. It was just incredible. So, we don't have that many highlights, right now, but that's okay. With the Giants, we know who they are. We're fans. We're gonna stick with them. It's all good.
We have Pablo. We have Pablo. Pablo is the highlight. Yep, Pablo is the highlight.
All right. So for Eric, this is Chad King. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast, and of course, follow us on our blog at torturecast.com, and like us on Facebook. You can follow us individually at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric. Myself at ChadK21 and on Twitter at TortureCast. That'll do it for episode 166. We'll see you next time for episode 167. Until then, a boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.